hogging the spotlight, though.
Okay, I'm sitting.
Okay, I'd like to call this meeting to order on May 21st here in Overton. Let's begin with the pledge. Pledge.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
All right, do you have any public comments? Raise them to the agenda here. Okay. Call for an acceptance of the agenda.
I move we accept the agenda as presented.
Okay, we have a motion to accept.
I'll second.
And a second. Everyone in favor say aye.
Aye.
Who seconded, I'm sorry?
Mr. Lobb.
Thank you.
Approval of the minutes of the previous meeting held April 16th for possible action.
I make a motion to accept the minutes of the April 16th meeting.
Very good, we have a motion.
A second.
We have a second. Mr. Lobb.
Thank you.
Everybody in favor say aye.
Aye.
Under the chair's report, we've got a couple of letters from the school district thanking Overton Power for their donations to the Virgin Valley High School and to the Wyatt Valley High School. Randy Law presented the Virgin Valley Awards last night, and I presented the Wyatt Valley Awards last week. And it's amazing to see 8 young people come up there, and it's amazing. Then go ahead and sit through it, and the same people continue to get awards. And for example, Jesse Rubio, award after award.
Oh, he's in the wheelchair?
Yeah. Yeah. My gosh, that kid's amazing.
Been a warrior.
Okay, how about an attorney's report?
I don't have anything at this time. I do have some in closed session.
Okay, thank you. All right, Ms. Melissa, it's management reports.
Okay, let's start with safety first and lead off with line operations. Oops, yes, sorry.
Okay, for the month of May, safety meeting for this month of May, which was last week, we had topics of heat exposure and ropes and rigging. We had a good attendance of 50 of our employees here in the at our both of our meetings, one here and one in Mesquite.
You have that many in each place?
Sorry, no, total.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, majority are here, but then we have been holding a small meeting in Mesquite later in the afternoon. I wanted to update you on a new Nevada State OSHA has put out a new revised statute that went into effect April 29th. It's all to do with the heat illness prevention plan. So ESCI trains us every year on heat illness prevention, but now the state of OSHA, or Nevada State of OSHA, has added to that. There's a couple things that stand out that we're working through, or have worked through and are implementing. A couple at the top there, I summarized it all on the right here, it's a couple of the bullet points, but job hazard analysis must be performed for every job. That's handled every day in our tell boards, but is something that they redefined that has to be happen with an eye towards heat illness and heat prevention. We must assign a person to monitor personnel during heat-related events. That's one of the biggest hurdles that we're covering. We're going to put out very soon before the first high heat day a little bit of a direction for our teams, and then we're going to work through some more permanent solutions towards that, because it's easy to monitor crews as they're together because we destine a safety watch on every crew, but it's those people that work on our teams that work by themselves that OSHA requires that we monitor them throughout the days. It's not just, we're not just capable of expecting them to go out and make the right choices, but they have to have a monitoring process for that. Must provide access to water, rest, and shade. I think that's pretty understandable. If you're from the desert, that's always been a practice of ours. Train employees. We train annually by ESCI. And then we're just required to support them through that. That's always been a focus of ours, to support in all of our safety practices, but also we're going to support through this heat illness prevention and all these new rules that we're putting forth. We're going to support our employees and make sure that they have safe practices going forward. Outages for the month of April. We had 10 planned outages and 4 unplanned outages. A lot of planned outages are transformer replacement. They're in the middle of the list, which it's always good to see maintenance being done. A lot of leaky transformers, rusted out transformers. There's just a whole gamut of different reasons why those transformers were replaced. The unplanned outages, we had another rat get into a switch in the Bunkerville area. We had birds up on a line in Warm Springs. We had an unknown, and we also had poles damaged by fire over there in the Mesquite area. It was a trailer that caught fire that was right next to one of our poles. So it wasn't necessarily because of the pole that it caught on fire that caused the outage. It was because of the trailer right next door to it caught the pole on fire, and we had to de-energize for that. So, service installations for the month of April. We had 2 commercial, 32 residential. Most of those hookups looks like they're in the Canyon Crest area, which is north of town towards the dump, and Dinosaur Substation, which is Pulte, essentially. That's where the vast majority of those are still happening. Month after month, that's where the majority of those hookups are happening. Service installations for the year, we're having a very average, like, it's pretty easy to see that steady every month. It's right in that 32, 34. So if we continue averaging 33 throughout the rest of the year, that'll put us right at 396, if my calculations are right. So that'll put us right in line for the last 2 years. We'll see how that goes through the rest of the year, but just a little bit of an update there. This is some pictures from the First South and Thistle job. Every month I'm reporting on this job. It's a big job that we're tackling down there behind the Mesquite post office down in that area, upgrading those lines to support more load through that area. These pictures were worth posting on here. Just shows the old infrastructure and then the new vault back behind that we're taking it to. So you can see the old vault is kind of up that sidewalk on that picture on the left behind the little blue hydraulic pump. They're actually in the sidewalk. So we're obviously upgrading the wire, but we're also putting our vaults back inside property where they're not in walking paths and making it all right as we go through and do this. But it shows the raceways and everything these men have to work around as they're plumbing that conduit to those new vault sites. Department training last month, we had a vault rescue we did out here in the yard. We set a vault out here in the pole yard, and we actually did some hands-on vault rescue training. It was a great training. Since then, we've learned a bunch of different practices from that. We've went out and purchased a new tripod on the right. That one's a brand new tripod. And then that picture on the right was actually taken last Thursday, where they went out and put hands-on and put it to work and made sure they understood all of the different parts to that vault rescue for that. So just want to give you an update. Go ahead.
So that goes out with your field trucks, that the tripod Correct. Goes and whoever's going to work underground, you Correct. Set it all up?
Correct. It's part of the process of having it set up as they're there working in that vault, not to wish they had it after the fact, right? So vault rescue.
I could see getting them up. Then it seemed like it'd be hard to swing them out to the side without
putting
the tripod over.
So we went through the practice the day on the left. We went through the practice. Every person did the practice, and we actually pulled the dummy, the pull top rescue dummy out of it. It weighs 180 pounds.
Oh, you didn't have to have a volunteer?
No volunteers. So it is difficult, don't get me wrong. Once you get up to that point, you have to, one hand, be running the handle, get it up to that point, and then reverse the handle as you're pulling it out. Now, we did it in a controlled environment where you're not wound up, right? But I'm sure during the accident, you're going to have all the muscles in the world to be able to pull that person out. And everybody was able to do that during that practice, so worked very well.
Okay. Yes, sir.
Do they have to wear a harness now when they go down into the vault?
They do, yeah, they do. Yeah, and we just barely went out to purchase new harnesses for the, we started with the Mesquite team. It was time for upgrades, but they make harnesses where there's attachments at their shoulders, at their hips, back, front. They're reflective. It's all arc flash rated. They've come a long ways. But yes, getting down inside those vaults, they are required to wear that harness at all times so that we have means to pull them out. Yeah.
They have their own harness, or there's three or four on each truck?
They all have their own harness. It has to be fitted to you.
Okay.
Just like pulling that out there, you can kind of see the dummy on the right. It's kind of stretched. It's obviously not fitting him right. Or maybe I can see it, but the harness is up above his head there. Yeah. But if it's not fitting you right, as you're pulling out of there by his hip, well, then it's going to allow it to possibly pull it in a different direction or even pull it off of them at that point. So it has to be fitted for that person. So, yes, harness is for everybody. The last update I'll give to you, our 38-ton crane, it's a our new crane to us. It's a 3.5-year-old crane. It's down for service, or not down for service. It's out of service right now. The main cylinder in the extension boom, which is the main cylinder in the boom, started leaking. So we sent it off to Altec. That's the manufacturer of it, and they are repairing that right now. It is a $63,000 bill to get that thing fixed. So pretty incredible. Definitely, it never comes at the right time. It was definitely not at the right time either. Right then, we were busy on that First South and Thistle job, setting vaults, and we needed that crane. So I'll keep you up to date on that, but that's something we had to take on that extensive repair right there.
Hey, Kyle, what do you guys do in the case of, like, during the heat, 115 degrees, you do have a guy that goes down. What kind of training? Do you guys bring an outside source in to walk you through those steps? Or one, how to identify, two, how to treat them if there is an exhaustion?
Yeah, ESCI does all our training for that, our safety consultant, and they run through that every year. Not only to monitoring the dizzy, like the leading causes up to that point, and then making the call before we get there is the hope, right?
Right.
But yes, their training takes us through all those steps, not only what to do to prevent, but also after that point. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Any other questions or comments?
I don't know if this will be for you or somebody in the scheduling or what. Are we, like, ready for the summer loads?
Yes. Right, Shane?
Yeah. Yeah.
I was going to say, you got to use your words, Shane.
Yes.
We're wrapping up some big projects that have been on our to-do list, even as of this week, that will give us a lot of comfort going into the summer over there in Mesquite. So we've done well in preparations.
Thank you, Kyle. Randall, the engineering.
Okay, thank you. On the 138 line from Tortoise to Gila, the contractors completed 4 of 19 foundations. They've pulled all the poles together, and they'll start staging them probably in a couple weeks. They won't be able to start on the line for about a month. We need to get those foundations cured up, and then they'll start building the line on the Gila side starting with. The long drive switchyard and the Raptor substation, the contractor's finishing up all the underground. We had a delay on our steel. Fortunately, Hunt had some other jobs that they could move their guys to, so we'll have a little bit of a manpower delay until the steel comes in for both those jobs, which is slated for June next month and August.
Randall, I saw the poles rolling. Did they pull any conductor? I saw they had rollers up.
You're talking about for the 130 light Raptor line in Mesquite?
Yeah.
Okay, that's my next.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Okay. They're waiting to get their pullers in, and they'll start that probably in a couple weeks. Yeah, they're getting ready to pull that in. They have their tensioners out on another job, and they're going to be bringing them down for that. I have a large load update. So now that you guys seen in the paper where Moapa West has kind of shared their project out, I wanted to bring you guys, again, the map showing all the different parts of this large load. And we have reached out to NV Energy and submitted our first draft of their application. And we had some comments back of things we need to complete before they'll accept the application. And one of those is we need to complete our feasibility study. They had some criteria in there that they wanted to know exactly where we were going to terminate and start feeding these new projects. And we won't have that until our feasibility study is done and we review it and see if we agree with the engineers and where we're going to place our facilities to feed these projects. And we should have that mid-next month. After our review, we should be able to supply that information to NV Energy and continue moving on with the application for the studies that they're going to require. Is there any questions? Anybody have any questions on this project?
I see some stuff over there where Nevada Power, Reed Gardner was, over there in the
blue?
Left hand, yeah.
Okay. Anyway, yes, that's the, where their light industrial is going to be. They've slated that for all light industrial.
Okay.
What does NV Energy have to do with it, though?
We have to bring the energy through their system to us. So they're doing studies to see on their side if they have the infrastructure to bring in 1,000 megawatts into Reed Gardner.
Oh, okay.
And so we have to pay for studies for them to decide what's possible, what's feasible.
Okay. In addition to how we're going to connect to them.
Exactly, yeah. There's three different studies that we have to pay for, and they all encompass all NV Energy, their system impact, their transmission service agreements, and they do a feasibility study also.
Okay,
are the feasibility studies starting on their end? What can they produce? Or is there a study that looks at this plan and says, okay, based on this, this is the load we could expect from this plan?
We're telling them what we're going to need, and they're going to decide on if they can bring it to us or not. The power supply is going to come through Tenaska, who's our power supplier. And so NV Energy decided whether they have the capacity to bring it to Reed Gardner.
But how did we figure out what our potential load could be?
By the developer. They're telling us what they think they're going to want.
Okay,
and so we take that and put that into our feasibility study, and that's how we're going to determine what infrastructure we need to build to facilitate that.
Randall, are we still on track with our solar? We're still looking at June 30th?
We are, yes. July 1, yes. They're doing some testing right now.
Okay.
Were you going to cover that in yours?
Go ahead.
Okay. Anyway, yes, we're looking to have that ready, and they should be able to bring that on easily by July 1. We'll have that. Okay.
If there's power before July 1, will they start feeding some, trying to move it, or?
Well, Melissa, why don't you address that one?
Okay. The answer to that is it depends if it is cost effective for us to take it. There is, of course, my direction to Tenaska was this. If they have power available on June 15th and we can get it for half the price of what we're getting from our market contract, we want to take it. But not if we're going to do that and then pay bandwidth charges because we've accepted that. So we're contractually obligated to take it on July 1. Tenaska knows that. If it's a benefit to us, we would take it before, but Tenaska is going to help us calculate that.
Gotcha. Perfect.
Okay, any other questions on the Moapa West? Okay, in Mesquite, there's some new projects that are coming on board. There's going to be a new hotel near Tag and Go in Mesquite. Spring Hill Suites has paid their connection fees, and they'll be starting probably within the next few months. And we do have some Overton projects that I'm not sure if you guys are aware of, but this is out at the Valley of Fire. They're building a brand new visitor center, which will be completed probably in 2 months. And it'll be probably half a megawatt load to us. The Green Valley has paid all of their connect fees. Their plans are in the county right now. We also have American First has paid their fees. They're going to be building a new building behind their existing building here in Overton. And then Tesla is building, this is up at AMPM up in Moapa, and this project is our electric fill stations, Tesla fill stations. They already have them in Mesquite at the Eureka, at the Casablanca, and there's plans to put them at Smith's also.
What type of load does that put on our system?
That's like, I think we're feeding that with a 2,500 a KVA transformer.
So, big load.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah, each of those.
Because I usually see those big, it's like a, you know, the not a trailer, but a Connex box, you know, little Connex. I just assume they're full of capacitors or batteries.
Yeah.
Or something.
Could be. I don't know if they have batteries. I don't think there's any batteries on them. You're talking like the one at Walmart?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm not sure what's in that, but we've never seen any batteries associated with Teslas or any of the fill stations. And the last thing I was going to report on is the Bridge Source Mine. They have not reached back out to us on any connect fees or any feasibility studies, but I know that they are continuing to move forward with the project because I've received data requests from other entities studying that area for gas feeding and other things. So I know that they continue to reach out to other entities to gather all the information they need.
I got a notice in the mail to come to an open house for them, so.
Yeah, they're trying to smooth everybody, get everybody on board. They're doing their best. They're very kind. They're very good people to talk to when they're in those meetings. They're very accommodating. They try to answer all the questions, and they have very good patience with some of the people's approach to their project up there.
Is that the cement guys?
Okay, is there any, that concludes my report. Do you have any questions? Okay, thank you.
Okay, we'll take Shane for SubOps.
Yeah, so this is a follow-up from Kevin's report last month. This is Pulsifer Substation. We spent time in there making repairs to these transformers and painting them. We did electrical testing on them. They're 27 years old, but they test great, and we're hoping we can get another 27 years out of them. Along with that, to answer your question, yes, we're ready for our summer loads. We evaluate our whole distribution system and our loading, and we move load around to balance the circuits out and make sure that we're ready for those peak loads. And then we'll continue to monitor it throughout the summer. Something that Randall's team and operations has worked on recently is ECI, our engineering consultant, completed a system-wide study of our distribution protection system. They'll look at from our substations clear out to end-of-line protection, fuses, reclosers, to make sure that the coordination is working correctly. They came back with a lot of suggestions. Most of it was changing fuse sizing and then altering settings at our reclosers to ensure that that coordination through the system worked properly. And so if a mylar balloon or a bird or something gets in the line on one of those lateral feeders, we would expect that the recloser would open and clear that fault current. And if the mylar balloon's still there, then the fuse would blow and sectionalize that section. But it takes quite a bit of coordination to make sure that works properly. We went through and made changes in all of our feeder relays and our reclosers, and we're hoping to have a little bit better reliability with that going forward. With this, the escape project, we've been preparing that for that on our side with the metering. We've been building the metering cabinets to meter out our county line. That's the meter on the right, and then we also set up a verification meter at Lincoln Switchyard in Mesquite, just to verify that those county meters are metering correctly. They're, like Melissa said, they're planning to do some test loading next week. They energized their transformer recently, and so far everything's on schedule with that. That's all I have for my report, unless you guys have any questions.
Did we get that Lincoln County, that switch yard?
I was just going to ask.
Was that ours now?
Yucca?
Didn't we take in the agreement with them? Did we?
The agreement has not been finalized.
We have not finalized. Okay. I thought, yeah, we had that discussion. I just wonder if that happened. I have one question. My son's compliance over with the Net Power. And he sent me some pictures. A FedEx van The crew's working in the substation. They left the gate open. Pulls right up through the substation to the operation building and is trying to deliver a package to the building.
Not here, right?
Well, it's because it's a secured site. He's got to do reports on it and how it was accessed. I just wondered, kind of, what's our policy? Because I see the crew pull in, they'll go inside the building, but I see those gates open. And is that...
I hope you haven't seen them open recently.
Okay.
We asked them to close the gate in and out and keep the gate remain closed while they're in there.
Okay. I think you drove by an NV Energy
substation. Yeah. They also check in with our dispatch when they enter and then check out when they leave.
Okay.
We don't want anyone wandering.
Yeah, that's the thing. Just, you know, I think it was common practice. You know, we're in there, just leave it open, but make sure that gate's getting closed.
Yeah, I think that was
when you're in there.
Practice in the past, but we've tried to correct that. So.
Okay.
So originally, currently our power's all coming through NV Energy, but now we're going to have a new source of power located right there in Mesquite. We have our emergency plan and all that kind of stuff. How are we, once that comes online, it's another source of power, at least during the daytime, that we can use even if NV Energy's down and no one else is getting power. How are we feeding, right? And can we feed? And we have a priority list. Have we reworked all of that as far as who's going to get this solar power?
Well, it depends on the time of the year. Let's say that we have to, if we're open at Tortoise, and so nothing is leaving our system, then they have, during the day, 65 megawatts that they would be generating that we would then take. So depending on the time of the year, that could serve our entire load or it could serve a portion of our load. We have to decide in those moments, where does that energy, what has to be opened? Do we just keep that isolated in Mesquite and it doesn't come across the Mesa? Our sub-ops would make those decisions, but it depends on how much is going, if we're completely taken off of NV Energy so that we're ensuring that we're not feeding into their system, and then how much are they producing, because it changes by the hour.
Yeah, and so yeah, I guess if our lines are down coming, bringing us power, the lines to take their power to California or wherever they're selling it are down too.
Mm-hmm.
And so we get to make use of that power, mm-hmm. and that's fantastic.
Yeah.
Is that in our agreement, or is that just a gentleman's agreement? What's the plan there?
Well, if we have agreements for force majeure, that if something happens and we have to, if something happens on our system and we have to disconnect,
right.
Or something happens with their system and we're required to disconnect, we have the ability to do that. That's it. Our responsibility is for the care of our system. And so then also,
well,
if
yeah, I know we can,
and then if NV Energy, if there's an issue with bringing energy to us, but they can't get it out to the market, then we get to take that power and we would have some kind of a settle up for that, because we would take all 65,
right.
But we wouldn't be buying the remainder from Tenasca at that time.
Right.
How does that work when they're generating, say, we're using essentially all the power and then a cloud comes over and their generation cuts way back?
Mm-hmm.
So NV Energy has to supply us with that extra, right?
Well, that's their responsibility as the balancing authority to ensure that the entire grid is balanced at all times.
Okay. They have that responsibility.
Yes.
But depending on the type, go ahead, sorry.
I was just saying, you meant the solar companies put in a battery system to cover those kind of situations too?
They also overbuild their facilities. So they bank on getting some cloud cover going over and through.
Sure.
So they overbuild the number of panels to help compensate for that. But sure, if it's a cloudy day all day, yeah, it's going to be diminished.
Yeah.
So
but
we.
They do not have generation other than solar.
Correct. Correct.
I just read where there's some regulations coming that in some states now, there are some power areas that they're wanting all solar to have backup energy supply, much like the plants down by Vegas have, where they have to have turbines or whatever it is.
Combined cycle. Mm-hmm.
You have to have that, the solar people?
Yes, the people putting in this, whoever building the plant for approval in the future has to have backup energy production in case the solar goes down because of those kind of events.
That's interesting.
Yeah. We'll have to do some research on what states that is. And
yeah, I will.
Okay.
But I saw it and I went, wow, this is pretty important.
Now, Byron, you're right. They are going to eventually, not in this first round, but they are in the next couple of years going to install battery storage. And so that battery storage is going to be deployed at different times than when their solar is producing for us. So, and that is going to still flow through our system. In an emergency situation, if we were cut off from the grid for a period of time, we could reach out to Estuary and say, could you also deploy your batteries? Or could you, when your solar starts to drop off, could we ask that you deploy your batteries? We have that relationship that we will have with them, but it's not just a standard, if something happens with us, that they give us everything that they've got. Okay, that's it. Thank you, Shane. Yep. All right, we will go to administrative services. Scott.
I first of all want to welcome Lexi and Olivia, two of our interns this year. So thank you for coming. I'm sure you're learning a ton. And on
to about to be wowed.
About to be wowed by the cybersecurity report, May of 25. This is the good stuff right here.
Yes.
Are you taking notes?
Oh, Ina.
Yeah, is your notes going? All right, cybersecurity training. We did 91% in the month of April. Our lessons were combat social engineering, enforce access controls, and monitor threats continuously. Those were the three cybersecurity lessons. Unfortunately, we did have some people clicking on our phishing emails. I do want to go through some of those emails here. Hopefully you guys can glean some stuff. And for whoever's listening, hopefully they can understand some stuff as well. So here on the left, these are all emails. These are screenshots I had Steven take. These are the emails that were clicked on for the month. Here on the left, we have Yahoo Sports. Somebody wanted to unsubscribe to their Yahoo Sports. So they hit unsubscribe. So we got them. Over here, somebody thought maybe we had a company parking policy, and they clicked on the link. So we go.
Those may got me.
Oh. Jonathan. Not naming names. Oh my goodness.
You had that set up.
Come on.
Oh my goodness.
Be good.
So two of those were for the month of April, and two of these have happened for May that I'll report in June. Somebody didn't have enough storage, and they wanted to manage their limits, and so they clicked on the link, and we got them.
You got them like you have joy in that.
We got them. which means they get put into
extra
further training. So it's good. And we may just be having everybody do the extra training. This last one, somebody wanted to pick the size of their OPD shirt. Here we go. That's the theme of these two slides right here.
I don't know why you're smiling so much.
It's fun.
It's a party in IT every time.
Steven loves it.
Like a bonus every time you snag someone?
Yeah.
Steven will yell across, we got him, we got him.
That's wrong, man.
So email spam, we did stop 2,965 spam from reaching the end user. So that's what that number represents.
So Scott, can you communicate through email with the staff, like the employees, or?
Anything from IT people.
Everybody has become very scared to click on anything. And that's kind of the idea. You want them to be a little fearful of what they're clicking on.
So they can open it and see the email, but they can't click
on it. Absolutely, yes. Don't click on the link. You can look at the email. Don't click on the link if you're not familiar with who it is from. You're not ready for the email. Just don't click on the links. Bottom line. Firewall blocks by country. Number one is Netherlands. 100% server system uptime. Our data backup and restorations. Going at 100%, IT did move some servers there in the middle of the month,
yeah.
some of our virtual machines, so you see the little lag there, but we're back to 100% on our backups. The EISAC, we had 95 emails come through. I ran all of those through AI. The three security threat patterns were password attacks, physical security incidents. There's a lot of those. Transmission line vandalization, fiber vandalism by firearm, substation attempted break-ins. There's a lot of those emails that come through. A lot of that's happening in the country. And then some bottom down here below, some denial of service attacks. I want to talk about PCI compliance. We are in PCI compliance. Steven runs with this every year. He does a fantastic job. So what does it mean? Adherence to the payment card industry data security standard is a set of security standards to protect cardholder data. It ensures secure handling of credit card information during transactions. Why does it matter? It protects customer payment data from breaches and fraud. It builds confidence with customers. Compliance, we avoid fines, penalties, and reputational damage. It's not just a process that he goes through, it's a quarterly scan that he has to run on the system to continually make sure that we're compliant.
But so you don't have that information here on site, it's somewhere else, isn't it?
The credit card data?
Yeah, the credit card stuff.
The credit card data is transferred directly to Meridian or UPN, but we do have private information here on our own servers.
Oh, you do?
We do. So one of the projects I wanted to talk about that you guys approved in the fall was our camera project. Steven and Merlin did a fantastic job with that project. I thought we were going to wait to get some interns in. These two guys ran with the project, and I got some pictures in a minute. But they installed 16 cameras in the Overton main office, this office, 13 cameras in the Mesquite main office, 13 cameras in the Mesquite engineering building, 15 cameras in the Overton warehouse, and 15 cameras in the Mesquite warehouse. So you have every perimeter location, parking lot, yard is covered. Exterior doors, lobbies, it's all covered. Here's some snapshots of the cameras we have. So we have exterior doors, we have lobby, we have the vault. We have a complete 360 around the building, completely covered with cameras. Our payment drop boxes are covered. Steven, crawling through a tiny hole. I don't know how he got through that hole.
You made the hole bigger.
And then Steven up doing the install while Merlin holds the ladder. I will say that Merlin wasn't just taking pictures. He also, it was his day to get up there and do it this day. So he crawled around in the rafters, ran the Cat 5, installed some cameras. Merlin also built these maps, these interactive maps. So this is, I believe, the Mesquite Engineering Building, and someone is walking into that door, and on the interactive map, these cameras will light up as they walk through, and they're viewable to that camera. And then there is AI built into this camera system as well, where if we do have a break-in, something happens, we can put some prompts in, and we can follow that intruder through all of the different cameras as they walk through the building, as they do whatever they're going to do. So very, very cool system.
I assume we're recording.
Yes. I believe it's a 30-day yes. Recording. That we say video for.
I have a question.
Yeah.
Have you put up signs indicating that the video is...
We have a few signs. We're having more signs made right now.
But that was one of the big things for deterrence, right?
Yes.
People, unless you tell them that.
Absolutely.
Can some of you guys access those from remotely? Like if something's going on so you can see what's happening?
Yeah, you got a VPN into your computer so that you can access them. There's not an app that you can look at the cameras. You got to log into your machine to view them. But IT and a few others can do it remotely. All right, let's talk about facilities real quick. I was not good on taking the pictures. I did terrible. These are like the only pictures that I got of the building. February 22nd, I started this project. The Mesquite Engineering Building remodel. It was the day after board meeting. And I thought for sure we'd be back in there by April, but we weren't. So you're welcome to everyone who lives on this side of the valley. But here on the left, it was a complete rip out of the carpet. All the trim was painted. They floated the entire floor upstairs and downstairs, and then pictured them laying the carpet. But next month, when you're over there, walk around, take a look at the progress. I think it's pretty well done.
Did you get rid of those big things sitting on the floor there on the right picture?
These right here?
Yeah.
That's carpet. Those are installed.
Good. Hate to trip over them.
Yeah. And the last thing I'll report on is we had a lady from NRECA come down and do some investment and retirement training. She was with a PERC team from NRECA. Kelly scheduled her, I think, back in September. We were just able to get her to come. And what she taught us was sharpening your financial IQ in investing. We learned about investing in the stock market, 401ks, credit card debt, savings, time in the market versus timing the market, dollar cost averaging, compound interest, stock market volatility. It was a two-day course, 2 days. She came, did some in Overton, and did some in Mesquite. Very, very good training. We had 23 people attended in Overton, 29 attended in Mesquite with one spouse. There was 7 one-on-one personalized meetings with her. And as an end result to that, we saw 401k contributions increase in the last couple weeks. So
that's great.
Very good training overall. So Kelly, thank you for getting that scheduled.
Yeah, that's great.
That's my
report. Thank you, Scott.
Yeah.
Jonathan with financials. I almost forgot you, Jonathan, my favorite part of the meeting, and I was ready to just start talking. Sorry about that.
It's okay. We've had a few things going on in the finance department. Right now, we are beginning to do our mid-year inventory. We do that at the end of the year, a physical audit, but for mid-year, we try to keep on track of how we're doing, and at the end of June, so our warehouseman and our work order clerk is working on that, so next month we should be finishing up with that. Also, Melissa and I, we met with our Morton advisors, Jason Williams and Jason Richards, a couple weeks ago. We talked about the history of our account with Morton. We also talked about our plans for the future and where our where we can best allocate our funds with Morton, and where we're looking at going for the next few years. And we had some insights into the market. We've talked to, we had Dan Rusk here from Morton a couple of board meetings ago. We talked about the projections of how the market's projected to perform. And kind of more of the same with Jason. He talked about how obviously the timing and the amounts of these changes, but the interest rates are gonna go down. He used the term downward pressure. There's gonna be downward pressure, and the interest rates eventually are gonna be decreased. And again, we don't know when and timing and how much, but that's the outlook in a year from now, 6 months from now, we're gonna be at lower interest rates. But we also talked about, or he also mentioned that the market right now is extremely volatile with the current administration. President Trump is, he said all politics aside, he said, use the term a wrecking ball. When he makes policy and makes decisions, the market is doing these wide swings. So right now, just everything's extremely volatile, and advise us to make decisions as they come, and not try to make super long-term permanent decisions, but incremental decisions as we go, as we're talking about investing and making those decisions. So with that, we'll go ahead and start with the with our financial reporting for the month of
April, we closed, we're not closed, we brought in $3,885,000 on our operating revenue, line one. Our cost of purchased power was $2,261,000. Lisa's done a really good job at working with Tenasca and getting that Tenasca bill as low as possible in conjunction with our hydro allocation. So that bill, our invoice with Tenasca, has on average increasingly decreased every month, which has been extremely beneficial. And also with that, we're paying our transmission costs through MB Energy, and that billing has changed for 2025. And we've worked out some issues that we've been having with them, and we have reported higher transmission costs, and those, after we've got the billing straightened out there, those have been decreased. And so our cost of transmission is going to be a little decreased also going forward, so we're optimistic about that. So our line 20 cost of electric service is $3,626,000. Our line 22 interest received on investments, just over $82,000. And then our margins on line 29 for April are $394,355. So we're super excited to report that. That brings us to our year-to-date margin on column B of $455,000. So last month we just reported a year-to-date, we're in the red. Year-to-date we're at $25,000, so we're excited to be able to report a $455,000 for year-to-date now. So any questions about safe room operations? Okay, we'll go to the balance sheet. We have on line five, our net utility plant value is $151,678,000. We have our line eight investments and associated organizations, line 15 cash, line 18 temporary investments, line 23 inventory, which all leads to our total asset value of $186,879,000. And then our line 36 margins and equities is valued at $128,320,000. Then we have our long-term debt, accounts payable, and then our total liabilities of $186,879,000. So our cash detailed here, we close with a balance of $4,092,000. We, again, on the right, we have our year-to-date interest / dividends received for each of our financial institutions. And at the bottom, we have our Morton account. We close with a value of $14,408,000. And our Goldman account at $1,641,000. And then our year-to-date dividends / interest on the right there. Then a breakdown of our securities held in the Morton account by security type in the pie graph, and then by duration in the bar graph. We're anticipating using on that far right, the 0 to 25 period. We're anticipating using the majority of that here on the next.
Is the previous slide in the current, or is it April as well?
This is April.
So why isn't that number matching the statement of operations? The year to date, and it was 82, and this is 311. Maybe that's just the month of April.
For the interest?
Yeah. What?
Yes, this is year to date, okay. And then on the statement of operations is just April. So our year to date
is added those two together.
Is right here,
okay.
343, and then, yeah, we would have to do the math and do
okay.
All these to include that. So as of the end of April, OBD has 18,899,000 customers. We had a modest increase of 21. And then back in reference to our financial statements, our modified debt service coverage with estimates through the end of the year is 1.83. Our equity is a percentage of assets, and I'm just going to go back to our statement of, or to our balance sheet. That's the our equities divided by our total net assets there, which is 66, just over 66%, or 68%. And then our times interest earned ratio is at 1.81, and that's a year-to-date figure also. Connection fees, we received 31, valued at $31,827, and this report is always a little different than what Kyle reports, because those are the physical connections and these are the fees that we receive. The current billing arrangements, we have 30 residential customers at $6,088, and then two commercial customers at $611, and then our roundup program in each valley continues to grow. Then this is our current outstanding balance with CFC, $45,605,000. Our last quarterly payment was made in March and paid on time and in full, and our next one's scheduled for the end of June. And our average rate, interest rate after our discount is 3.35%. Then our our breakdown of our revenue. I like to include this, the residential, so we can go through and see each one of our customer classes: residential customers, irrigation, small commercial and industrial, large commercial, public street and highway, and then our other sales to public authorities. And then the totals at the bottom again, this is our total number with our customers, 18,899 with April. In April, we had total revenue received 3.63. So if you add these two, other electric revenue, that's our line one on our statement of operations. And then our total kilowatt hours sold, just over 30 million kilowatt hours. And then we always purchase a little more than we sell. And then the cost of our generation, and down towards the bottom, our monthly cost. So again, as I mentioned before, Lisa's doing a great job at optimizing our hydro and getting our Tenasca bill down. But we're at 71, our average cost for April, 71. I'm sorry, not 71, but 7 cents. And then monthly revenue, 12. And then our 2025 average is at average cost is 7.9.
So why are you having the badger then?
I'm not. He's being kind. There's two things that have happened. First off, I did have a talk with them after the first month and said, get us dialed in. But also, in April is water flow. So we always see an uptick of hydro at this time of year. But I did talk tough 1 month, Chad, just okay.
Yeah, we've been very very blessed with favorable water flow for so far for this year. And that's all my presentation, unless you have any further questions.
Thank you, Jonathan. I attended the emergency management meeting over in Mesquite with a couple members of our staff. That's a large contingency that we all met at fire station number one in Mesquite at the EOC. And this is a really well put together group. They have, Chief Andrus has been very thoughtful in this emergency planning. And one of the things that stood out to me, the company that does all of the garbage pickup in town was represented there. And I'm thinking, do we really need garbage pickup during an emergency? We do, because every one of their drivers is a CDL driver. And so in those events where Overton Power is another large entity that has a number of CDL drivers, we're busy restoring power or dealing with other things. They're not busy picking up garbage, so their drivers are available. They're very thoughtful in who they have in that room. And I'm proud of the relationship that we've built. you guys, some of you guys know, Richard and Randy probably especially, we haven't always had a loving relationship with the city of Mesquite. There's been contention in the past. And when we enter those rooms now, it is wildly different. I spoke at a chamber meeting with some of the other leaders in the from the city of Mesquite, the water company, Southwest Gas. It's enjoyable. It's enjoyable to sit at those meetings and have that relationship and for us to visit. And so I'm proud of the work that we've done. And Christy and Kyle represent us on that, and they've done a very, very good job. I also met, I've had two meetings with the BLM in concert with NREA. I reported to you guys a couple months ago that they were working on a, they have so many acronyms I have to read. It is, if I could find it here, Permanent Instructional Memorandum, a PIM is what they're working on. And what they want Overton Power to agree to is a Memorandum of Understanding. And this specific Memorandum of Understanding is in regards to wildfire response and communication and then investigation. So we've had a couple of meetings. At the start of this, when we were working with the fire manager, the BLM gave a special liaison that came out of the Cedar City office that was for Nevada, that she was to work between the fire and the lands and realty department, and she was to act as a liaison for us. And she did do a very good job and had a number of meetings that we attended. Last Thursday, we received an email from her that that position was going away. So one of the federally cut positions. But she said, not to worry, I will work with you through that transition. You'll still work with that same fire management team, but I wanted to give you a heads up. On our Monday meeting, she was already gone. So we'll continue to work with BLM and the staff that they do have available. They would like to have this memorandum of understanding done by mid-June in anticipation of the fire season. So I'll continue to work on that with the other fellow BLM, or I'm sorry, NREA members. I want to talk with you guys about NERC and WEC. We use those terms interchangeably, and a lot of times you hear us talk about NERC and WEC compliant. So I want to talk to you about, first off, what NERC is. NERC is the overall regulatory authority responsible for ensuring the reliability and security of the entire North American bulk power system. WEC, on the other hand, is one of NERC's regional entities, and so they're responsible for the western interconnection of the western United States. So when we say NERC and WEC, NERC is the entire nation and WEC is in our western area. So they include compliance monitoring and enforcement, reliability planning and assessments, and coordinating operating and planning activities for its members. In 2007, OPD5 registered with WEC to become compliant. Randall was hired at that time, and he worked on that compliance piece with WEC. WEC then issued a radial feed exclusion for small radially fed utilities like ours that have one radial feed coming into your system. And Randall worked for a number of years. I feel like it was years to get that exclusion. Was it years?
No.
Okay. I just want to share a funny story about that because this will express to you why Randall loves me the way that he does. At the time,
I don't.
At the time that Randall was working on this exclusion with WEC, it was a daunting process, and he worked in a small cubicle just outside of our customer service area on this side of the building. And he was sweating bullets about the report coming back. So with the help of some friends that I will not name but are in this room, we put Saran wrap over the doorway of his cubicle, and then we filled his entire cubicle with blue bar paper crumpled up, and then we put a sign that said, "Hey Randall, your WEC paperwork came back." And that was the start of our friendship. So Through Randall's work, we did get that exclusion, and we no longer were required to be WEC compliant. As we've worked through the process with the new solar development coming in and feeding through our system, we have been in talks with engineering consultants that have said the WEC threshold for you to be in compliance is 75 megawatts. Now, through these conversations, we've been under the understanding that we will never have a time that we would be putting 75 megawatts back out onto the grid. And if we did put more than that, NV Energy has their protections in place that we would still be considered a regularly fed system, and so we would not need to be WEC compliant. But as we've talked with the solar developer and with Lincoln County Power, who is originally connecting to that solar, they feel like that there's a possibility that we do need to be WEC compliant. And instead of us waiting until WEC comes and drops the hammer and says, you should have been compliant and now you're in trouble that you weren't, we're making the decision that we should reach out to WEC and say, should we be compliant? And if we are, what are your compliance requirements? What pieces and parts would we be required to do? At that point then, Randall has already spoke with a consultant who said their bid, I guess I should keep their bid quiet because we might go up for other bids. They gave us a fee. They gave us a fee that would be to help us fight to say that we should not be compliant. I think what we need to do is go to WEC and say, what compliance would we fall under? And then we need to make a recommendation to you on where we should we spend our money. Do we spend the money in fighting if we should be compliant, or do we spend the money on becoming compliant? The caveat to that for us to consider, too, is there is talk of the same solar developer putting in another far, far larger development in Lincoln County in a different area, not close to Mesquite, but it would still come through our Torta substation. If that size of development goes in, Lincoln County would absolutely be required to be WEC compliant, and thus so would we. So we need to take that into consideration when we're deciding if we're going to spend money on fighting it. How long does it buy us? Is it even worth it? And so I just don't want that to come as a surprise to you. Randall has been working in conjunction with the WEC compliance officer at NV Energy as well. There's many things that come with this compliance. It could be that they have a specific amount of maintenance that you're required to do every year. We do maintenance on our system, but they have very defined maintenance requirements, as well as documentation of all of that maintenance. Up to, if you are a transmission operator, that you require a 24/7 manned SCADA system that with dispatchers, and so it swings quite large on what those requirements are. Instead of us worrying or hoping to fly under the radar, I think we should just address it and say, if we're going to have to be compliant, what compliance are you requiring of us? So I've instructed Randall to set up that meeting. We have not got it set up yet, but we're going to request that. If there's any other questions, I know that was kind of a lot, but CRC, our Colorado River Commission, they hosted an annual customer meeting that they do with all customers, and then they meet individually. I hosted just our individual one last week. They are supporting the assistance that's going to come from the Help Hoover Dam Act. They are hoping that those funds will be released to them. If they are not released to them, they are also working to submit for an IIJA grant that is for $80 million. All of those funds would be used for infrastructure upgrades such as widehead turbines, as well as maintenance. So it's not an either or. They would love to have both. The dam could use the maintenance and the upgrades from both, but they do feel like there's a chance that they could get one of those. And so we're hopeful of that. And again, we're supporting Vernon, and I will talk to you guys in a little bit about the support that we're giving towards the Help Hoover Dam Act. The other discussion that we had is our Parker Davis contract, which is one of the of our hydro contracts, that expires in 2028. So the negotiations for that contract will begin just next month. In a couple of weeks, they're going to send out the application. We have benefited for, I want to say, 4 years now. I think it was in 2020 that it started. I think it was 2020. We have been benefiting from layoff from that Parker Davis contract. We have neighboring businesses in the basic industrial park that have not used all of their allocation. I am going to try to negotiate that we just be given that layoff, that becomes a part of our contract instead of us contracting for a certain amount and then taking layoff that they don't need. As we do those negotiations, if they're not going to need it, I want it. So we will start those negotiations soon. Anytime you open a federal hydro contract of that nature, other people want to get their fingers in the pie. That's just a given. We've seen that with Hoover. We saw that with SLIP. I anticipate that we will see that with Parker Davis as well, and we'll work through those negotiations as much as we can. The other key thing for the Parker Davis contract, that's our only firm hydro contract, which says if you're allocated this much, you receive this much. Now, if the water flow doesn't support that, then they go out onto the market and purchase to firm that up. There's a number of customers from the Parker Davis that say you're firming up at WAPA is firming that up at higher rates than what we're buying the rest of our power for. We should have the option to not take your firming, that we can say, and with the CRISP contract, that's exactly what we can do. They have replacement power and firming power that we get to say on a monthly basis. We work with Tenasca to make that decision on whether or not we want it based on the price. With a Parker Davis, the way the contract is now, it's set. You get what you get and you pay. So that will be a benefit to us. If they do that, then we get to say how much we have them firm for us or that we just get through Tenasca. So I'll keep you guys up to date on that. We had an employee from our customer service department in Mesquite submit her resignation yesterday. She is going to be moving out of the area, and her last day will be June 27th. So we will be posting that position and looking to get her replacement as soon as possible. As a management team, we have reevaluated and prioritized all of our capital projects from 2025 to 2027. Our staff is busy. We have had a lot going on, and I've pulled them off of their projects, and we have sat in this boardroom and went through every single project and said, how much does it cost? Where are we at? What has to be done? What can we not do? We have reprioritized all of that. We've allocated all of those costs by quarter through 2027. And then Jonathan has been analyzing cash flow. In June, we will be bringing to you guys a detailed report of the anticipated jobs, the cash needs, and the strategies for both. So I just wanted to give you an update on that. We talked about that as part of my 90-day plan. The review process is done, and now we're doing the analysis on the cash, and we'll be bringing that to you. Speaking of strategies, we have set the location for our strategic planning session. The meetings will be held at the Spillway House located at the Hoover Dam. It is stupid how excited I am for us to go to the dam and work on our strategic plan, but my heart is, there's no better place for us to set strategy for the coming years than surrounded by hydropower. So the meals and the lodging are in the planning stages now. We have a kickoff call with the facilitating staff of CFC in 2 weeks. And then at our June meeting, we will give you guys all of the details in the agenda for that August meeting. You guys know we have a break from our monthly meeting in July, but you will be receiving correspondence through July in preparation for that meeting. If you remember last time, or for those of us that are new, we do a SWOT analysis, strength, weaknesses, opportunities, and threats. that you see, and each one of those are sent to you, and then that is compiled. So the management staff and the board will all do all of that ahead of time, and then when we get to the meeting, we'll analyze those results and set strategies based on that. So because you guys are on vacation in July, we will ensure that Becky is sending out reminders to you guys that those emails have gone out for you to please check your email. If it's received after 8 a.m., we'll send you a reminder, Rich, so that you go back in and check that email again, or you know to get it the next day. So. Mr. Nelson reported that we did the Virgin Valley Senior Awards Night for the scholarships, and I was railroaded a little bit into attending that meeting. I'm going to be honest. I got a very kind invite from Mr. Lobb asking if I would please join him to go to that, and I was so excited. I've never been to one of those meetings before, and so I sat down and I said, so how does this work? I mean, do we get a picture or do we just clap when they announce our name? And Randy says, so what will happen is I'll hand out all of the certificates while you say a little something. And I'm like, oh, now I know why. Yes. Thank you for that. But I want to say,
you guys ever do impromptu? You did a great job.
There is something incredibly, incredibly heartwarming about watching just amazing, amazing young kids. I believe there were 10 kids that were called on the stage that participated in 3 sports for the entire 4 years of high school. There were 13 valedictorians. Of those kids that participated in 3 sports for 4 years, 4 of them were valedictorians. That's incredible to me that they did that much work on their schoolwork as well as played sports. And by the end of the night, some of those kids looked like pack mules with all of the ropes and the medals and the things around their neck. Just you cannot help but think that the world is in good hands, right? Those kids were unbelievable. Okay. The Governor's Office of Energy was awarded grant funding for energy resilience. If you guys remember, a couple of years ago, we applied for this same kind of grant. At that time, I believe that grant was $14 million. As NV Energy and members of NREA, we all applied individually, and NV Energy was awarded the entire amount. If I remember the numbers correctly, and I know it's on record, but don't quote me. It was about $14 million that went to NV Energy, and $350,000 was to be spread across everybody else that applied for a grant. So our executive director at the time, Carolyn, reached out to the Governor's Office of Energy and let them know that we were disappointed in their decision making. They then reached out to us, to NREA, and said that they have another round of grant funding. This time they have $7,086,000, and that this program would be used solely for small utilities who serve into the state of Nevada. So we've had a number of meetings about this. We've essentially been meeting twice a week, every week since this information came out, to figure out what was our best avenue for this. One option is that everyone in the each member of NREA come up with $7 million worth of projects. We see who submits the best grant application, and then we let the Governor's Office of Energy decide, and essentially we're competing with our friends and neighbors. The other option that we came up with was, what if we all went in together and we did one grant application? Originally, they told us that you could not do partnerships, or you couldn't do joint applications, you could do partnerships. And they had to help us define what that was. And essentially what that said was there had to be a lead entity, and I'll just throw out names. If Overton Power became the lead entity, then we could have a couple partner utilities that would go with us. their funds would come through us, and all of their budget reconciliation would go through us as well. So the Governor's Office of Energy is only willing to give it to one entity, and if you want to spread that amongst your peers, then you still have to do all of the budgeting, and all of the funds have to funnel through you. So we came up with the idea, well, then what if NREA, as an entity, applied for the grant? And then we said we would split that evenly amongst the 10 entities a part of NREA. That took a lot of legwork because NREA is not set up as an entity to receive federal grant funds. Lisa, our executive director, is just an absolute go-getter because we've been busy at both the state and federal level for legislature, as well as working on this grant. The information came out on April 15th, and the grant is due, the application is due by June 15th. So she worked through all of the paperwork. We worked with the Governor's Office of Energy. We had two issues that we needed to meet handle at the very beginning. First off was, could NREA even receive the funds? Could we do it as one lump? And the other was, is Overton Power District, Alamo Power District, and Lincoln County Power District eligible for the grant funds? As you guys know, many of the grants that have been available are only for co-ops, and we've been left out. We were designated as approvable. So we got through both of those hurdles. We decided to come up with the theme for this as fire mitigation. We would do one giant application. Each entity would come up with their piece and say, what would we use that money for? And so Vernon, Kyle, and Randall came together as a team and said, what could we do under fire mitigation for us in Southern Nevada? What could we come up with? And these guys came up with an incredible idea that I think is, I'm so hopeful that we're going to get this money. But again, that turnaround is incredibly quick. So for fire mitigation, the cost that we would get, the total grant is $7,086,000. So our portion was going to be 1/10. Of those 10 entities, one entity dropped out and said that they didn't want to put in a grant application. So 1/9 of that is $787,000 would be our portion that we could apply for on the grant. With that grant, it requires that we do a 48% match, meaning that we would have to prove that we could contribute $378,000 to the project of our funds. So Lisa, our NREA executive director, then went and spoke with the Governor's Office of Financial Assistance and said, do you guys have anything available to help with our matching, our grant matching funds? And they said, yeah, we could match 50% of your 48% that you need to match. So the caveat with that was that that application had to be in by May 15th. So Randall and Vernon worked overtime on their days off. They were in here on Fridays. Randall had his team working on getting that submittal done, and I am excited to report that they did. On Friday, that was submitted. In addition to just the matching portion being submitted on the 15th, they've already got the budget done for the entire project. So the pieces that we're waiting on right now, we had six people that Vernon has reached out to ask for letters of support. We've already received four of those back. We're waiting on that. And then for Randall's team to just finish up some mapping and pictures. So we will have that ready to submit on June 15th. So let's talk about what it is. We would need to spend $1.2 million on the project with $700,000 that we would get plus the matching. That project is $1.2 million. We would then be required to pay the 48% of those matching funds is $388,000, but the GOFA can come up with $188,000 of that. So for a $1.2 million project, Overton Power will come out of pocket $188,000 if we receive both if we're allocated the matching funds and the grant. We will submit that on June 14th, and we should know by the fall if we've gotten those funds. The project that they came up with is a project in the Moapa area where SNWA has lines. It's very heavy vegetation. They have a lot of trees. If you remember, it's been a few months ago, Kyle reported on an area where we had wanted to cut trees, but we couldn't get in to cut trees, and then a tree fell on our line and caused an outage. It's very difficult when we have outages up in that Warm Springs area. Not only is it a long way for our guys to just get in the trucks and drive up there, but then they have to go on a lot of back roads. If we could take all of that infrastructure out of that high dense area and move that closer to the road, and then we would reinforce that with ductile iron poles, that's fire mitigation, right one-on-one. And the other thing that makes me so happy about this is this is an expensive project that would not have been number one on our reliability. Moapa area, we would not have said we're going to concentrate $1.2 million on there. But if we could do this project for that area, it's good for our overall system, but it's also good for us. And one of the key things that we've really highlighted in this is that that area, when we have an outage, that supplies the drinking water for the Moapa Valley. And so this also helps with preserving reliability towards that drinking water. So we're very excited about that. Vernon did an incredible job of the write-up of why we should do this and how it's going to help us. And Kyle and Randall have done just, it's incredible to me the amount of work that they've gotten done in a few days to come up with this project, map it out, stake it, and get it ready and come up with a budget. So we're really excited to get that submitted. The last thing that I just wanted to give you guys an update on, it was confirmed just through the media yesterday that NV Energy has replaced their CEO with their new CEO's name is Brandon Barkhoff, and he was their general counsel prior to this. Doug Cannon has given his resignation and will be gone. I believe it's June 11th is his last day. So we're seeing a change there. They've been hot in the media right now with a PUC investigation for the rates that were charged to the residential customers. It's been, the accusations are that they overcharged about 60,000 people by about $17 million, and the PUC is investigating that. And I don't know that Doug's leaving is as a result of that. That's just what the media is stating. So I'll just, we wish them well, and we're looking forward to working with a new CEO. That concludes my report, unless you guys have any questions for me.
That's been good to work with, though, right?
To me, yes.
Mm. I have a couple of questions. One, I'm concerned about treating all NERC customers the same. They aren't. They're much different. And size and requirements. Not anything to do with this deal, but I think our independence or partnership with someone who has like interest is maybe a better fit. I mean, we're into this now, and that's okay. But in the future, equal partnership is not the same. They're not equal partners, you know what I mean.
No, I absolutely agree, and I want to tell you that we've had extensive talks about this. First off, I think it behooves us politically to show the Governor's Office of Energy that we are willing to work together as a state entity for all small utilities, that we can work together, that that's the difference between us and the one IOU in the state. Mm-hmm. The other thing that I think that we will see from this is, originally we were told there are 5 rounds of grant funding that were coming. This second round has already been received by the state. If the 3rd, 4th, and 5th round are not clawed back by the federal government, now we've seen that the current administration is very pro-energy and very pro-resilience, and so we're leaning to the idea that we probably will have other rounds. What I think we're going to see in those rounds, Mike, is that more entities will drop out of the application. We have an entity currently that's located in Idaho that serves into Nevada. They had great need for this money for a project that would serve specifically an Indian tribe in their service territory in Nevada. They don't anticipate asking for grant funds to serve Nevada after this one project. We had another entity that dropped out, and then a third one who wasn't going to take at this time, and then at the last minute said we would. I think what we'll see is that for rounds 3, 4, and 5, there won't be as many applicants, for one. And second of all, we won't always have common themes that we can use. We want to make sure that we ensure good, we maintain good neighbors, and that was a big part of this first one. But I think in coming, if somebody can't take all of their money, Overton Power is willing to take it. We're willing to take that. And my stance on this the entire time has been, we're not leaving one penny with the Governor's Office of Energy. NREA is going to get it. And if one entity can't take it, we will.
Yes, and I think that's not a bad strategy in this case. I'm really looking to the future, and if the group of us, the group of things, are going to be, let's say, the lead agency, then I think we need to be sure we're at the table there. And I know everybody sits there, but there's at the table, and then maybe there's a back room too. I think for the money involved, it's for our customers. And the agency up in Idaho, India, that's fine. Let them worry about their money. I'm worried about our customers. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm trying to reduce the cost here. So just a little suggestion that it's not all we. We got to look out for us.
Yeah.
And. All right. And this doesn't cut our costs at all anymore, does it? This project overall. I mean, it's something we need to do, but as you said, it isn't on our future list at all, is it?
No.
Okay. So it's actually an extra expense for us.
Yes.
We get $1 million project for $100,000.
$200,000, but yes.
Okay, whatever. Yeah.
Yeah.
I was making it look better.
Yeah. Well, I want to tell you the truth. We've got to spend $188,000, so.
Okay, that's a compass.
Okay.
Thank you.
Really, some of the WEC compliance, any idea what the monetary hit would be? Say, if we decide to go on the compliance side, which I think is probably the right move, any idea, do you have a projection of, you know, the monitoring, all that?
Randy, I don't. I can tell you that depending on what requirements they have on us,
right,
it is likely that we are going to require more staff. How much staff and at what level, I can't even guess right now.
Staff, you got equipment, you got all those types of things. So I guess what it comes down to is
what compliance are they going to say what we fall in? And like I said, it varies. It could be that you're required to do a certain amount of maintenance on specific infrastructure and submit documentation for that. All the way to, you have to have a 24/7, 365 transmission operating desk. Those are wildly different
in
costs.
What kind of time frame are you thinking as far as, like, okay, if we decide to do the WEC compliance, do they have a time frame to get up to compliance, or is it more of a recommendation?
That would be more of the meeting we're going to get to.
It's kind of a negotiation potentially.
Right. We can talk about that and see what their feelings are, and we would ask for time, obviously, to roll into this. So in the past, they've been pretty good to work with, especially knowing that we're a radial system. Really, our impact to the BES is minimal.
Well, and the concern that I would have, if they want a bunch, obviously, I think the smart move is to be compliant, because you're going to have to get there eventually anyway. Mm-hmm. The concern I have would be simply what is going to be the monetary value for OPD and how much of an impact. I mean, budget-wise, all that kind of stuff, I think that could be...
That's one of the things that we've been talking about, where once we find out what those requirements are,
yeah,
Then we need to come to you guys for budget allocation of where are we going to spend the money? Are we going to spend the money in fighting what those compliance requirements are, or are we going to spend the money in becoming compliant? But it's far too early for us to tell you right now.
I'm just curious how that
plays out. Can't you require, if anybody wants to hook up to us, that's the fee, on top of our transmission.
An additional fee?
That they pay all those compliance costs. If we have to have, it'd be over $1 million.
The solar guys have to do all the, cover the cost, because they're making some current.
So the system use fee that we have right now is already in place for them, but if we are not required to be compliant right now, but if they put in a large scale project in the future that did require, then of course that would be a part of that negotiation.
Okay, yeah, because they should, I mean, if we're forced into it because of them,
yes,
it should all be on them.
But WEC hasn't reached out to us at all, right? This is just preemptive discussion. Mm-hmm. So that's smart. But I think the caveat's going to be, do you wait for them to reach out? Because if you do, that could be detrimental.
We've weighed that.
Why would it be detrimental?
Because then they come back and say, you should have been compliant, and here's a fee for not being. And it's better for us to go to them and say, what would be,
more than you realize.
What are your requirements and what compliance would we fall under? And they may look at us and say, you're still radially fed. NV Energy still has the protections in place for you. You don't have to be compliant. But I would rather us know that than find out after.
Make sure we are compliant, if we're not. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Or that if we don't need to be.
Just an idea where we sit.
And we've reached out to NV Energy's compliance officer and asked him to look at our system again and see what they're willing to take on responsibilities for. In the past, they've accepted a lot of responsibility for protection at Reed Gardner. We're hoping they'll do the same thing. If that's the case, that helps us out.
Kind of falls under that umbrella of energy. Yeah.
I just think it's far better for us to be proactive on this than reactive.
Oh, you did? Okay, sorry. My son works on this compliance team in Nevada Power, and he has about a staff of 6 that work on this year-round. And they're actually they're starting an audit. They have practice audits where they hire a team of attorneys to come in and do the questioning. He was just up in Portland who was getting the audit. They sit through the WEC audit there because they're all Warren Buffett companies. And so they look at those audits. But Rocky Mountain Power 2 years ago received a $42 million fine because they were out of compliance.
That's why I think it's important to do exactly what you're doing.
Yeah, so we need to look at what it's going to cost, let WEC know that we want to be in compliance, but what cost, and do what we need to do to maintain the compliance.
Sometimes sitting back and waiting is not the best answer.
No. Yeah, my son and I, we have had some extensive conversations.
Well, good. Push him in the direction of under their umbrella.
Yeah. Well, he says, you've got to pay his consulting.
I'll take him golfing anytime he wants to go.
Okay, Mr. Chairman, let's move on to the next.
I agree. Let's go to letter I here, review of possible approval of the sexual gender-based harassment policy. And Melissa has reworked this. This
policy was last approved in 2010. I originally went through this and sent it to Byron for review, and there were so many changes to it that I just redlined the entire old policy and gave you a complete new one. It would have been too difficult for you guys to try to read the back and forth, so I just gave you a whole new policy that I feel like is up to date. I mirrored a lot of the changes in all of our policies that we're updating, removing the district, changing it to OPD5, and then just making sure that we have included the safe practices from both current state and federal regulations. And I'm happy to answer any questions that you guys have on it, but I won't make you read through the 4 pages of policy.
Hallelujah, brother.
I'm assuming you guys go through the trainings once, twice a year.
Yes, yeah.
I've reviewed it, made some suggested changes, and improved it at this point.
I notice annual training on this, and that seems another annual training to taking a day or something like that. Once you go through it, in here it also says that the supervisors will review it with the employees. Every new employee has to have the whole training. Mm-hmm. But once you've had the training, seriously, do you need to have a yearly training of this? It's not much stuff. And it seems like you need to review it with the supervisor, has to review it with the employees annually, but a whole training class seems a little much.
So,
the school district is mandated.
We do require it. It's not an entire day. We're usually, it's a part of our monthly safety program, and it usually takes us about an hour.
Well, that's different than, it's sort of impression here that you're going to go through the whole sexual harassment training, which usually does take a day.
It doesn't take us an entire day, but we do require when you start that you go through the entire training, and that once a year you're reminded.
Reminded, I like that part.
Yeah,
I
mean, with refreshed.
I should bring it up, but I mean a whole day training is a little much. But if it's part of the safety meeting or the same kind of thing.
Yeah.
There's many that we have to annually be trained on, not just necessarily this sexual harassment, but it's part of our safety trainings we have monthly. Fits in there very well. It's efficient use of our time, and we get plenty of refresher from those courses.
Any further questions for Ms. Melissa or staff?
I move that we approve this sexual gender-based harassment policy, P14.101.
Thank you.
Second.
There we have a second. Everyone in favor say aye.
Aye.
I'll second it.
Mike.
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 Mike,
thank you.
Okay. Well, let's move on to J, review and possible approval of OPG billing, monthly energy consumption policy, possible action.
This policy, again, had not been approved since 2010. I made it more up to date with our, with the removal of district, getting it with our current layout and OPD 5. The other thing that, we changed that was important was, and I worked with Christy on this, was the returned payments, the fees, making sure that we were in compliance with that, that those fees that are charged to the from the bank are then passed on to our customers, and we have recorded the right cost. So, and again, I have sent this to Byron and received his approval before I presented it to you.
My only concern was sometimes I don't get my bill until 4 or 5 days before the due, on the bill. Sometimes there's a billing in either the mail or the.
So, Mr. Jones, we have a perfect opportunity to sign you up for e-bill, and you would receive it in your email the day that it is
sent. I'm looking at those customers that don't have a computer and the ability to e-mail exist, or whatever it is.
Do you know someone?
The billing department also has a yearly calendar that they put out the billing due dates.
Mm-hmm. We send you the bill due dates. We report to you every month arrangements that have been made for people who are struggling to get to pay their bill. But we also work with people who come in and say, I didn't get my bill. And if you've never paid late before, we waive your penalty.
Okay.
So there is, we do everything we can to work with our customers. But I would still like to sign you up for e-bill.
And auto pay.
And then you don't have to worry about it.
2025, let's go next. Okay, letter J.
Yes, for that.
Have a motion.
Move to approve.
On monthly billing.
Move to approve OPDS-03001. Okay, present.
We have a motion. Looking for a second.
I'll second.
Thank you. We have a motion and a second. Did you get it, Becky?
I got that one.
Very good. Everyone in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposition?
Aye.
He already coached me.
That wasn't an opposition. He was in favor.
Yeah. I didn't say it soon enough. Okay. A legislative update discussion only.
Stephen, would you pull up our PowerPoint, please?
We've had legislative updates, haven't we?
Well, it's that time of year.
Oh, jeez.
Just a few days left.
Like you're in government class or what?
Sorry, Chad.
Where's the current events template that you had?
The Nevada legislature for 2025 runs from February 3rd through June 2nd. And on February 11th through the 13th, I went with a group of employees and a board member to Carson City for Public Power Day. I wanted to just give you guys an update. We have been busy with calls, trips, and bills through this legislative process. And I just want to give you guys an update on everything that we've been working on and where things are headed. So for the Public Power Day, we went with Nevada Rural Electric Association, and from OPD5, we had Randall, Kyle, and Vernon, and myself, and then representing the board was Mike. Randall and I sat on the Senate floor with Rochelle Nguyen. Rochelle chairs the Senate Growth and Infrastructure Committee that deals with energy in our state. So that was very advantageous, and we thank Carolyn Turner, our former executive director, for working out that relationship building for us. I also had the opportunity to meet with Senate Majority Leader Nicole Cannizzaro, and we spoke extensively to her about permitting reform, both from a reliability standpoint for generation and transmission assets, but as well as for access to wildfire mitigations. And then, of course, we rounded out that meeting discussing with her hydropower. Vernon, Kyle, Randall, and Mike had meetings with Toby Urich and Jeff Stone, and they echoed those same sentiments. Toby is an incredibly responsive to us, and we work to continue that relationship. Upon our return from that trip, we have maintained communications with every one of those legislators. We have been in email correspondence with both the legislator and their chief of staff. Any social media postings that we have made, any newspaper articles, we keep them up to date on that. Politicians like for those social media updates. And so we have been working to maintain those relationships. From a bill standpoint, we have, as NREA has been in support of, it started as Assembly Bill 529 and then moved to Senate Bill 529. This bill was originally championed by Valley Electric last legislative session for station power, requiring that solar developers in your service territory are required to receive all station power from the entity where they're located, not who they're connected to. This year, Valley put it forward again, but this time with support from NREA. And the bill passed unanimously out of the Assembly and their Growth and Infrastructure Committee. And then it passed unanimously out of the Assembly on April 22nd. Howard Watts was the chair, and he championed that bill for us. Once it reached the Senate side, then the politics heated up. Valley's lobbying team led those negotiations with NREA in support, and they worked in good faith with the solar developers, lobbyists, to come to an agreement. By the end of this process, the requirement to get it out of Senate committee was that the solar development's lobbyists would be neutral on that. Those negotiations stalled on May 12th. It was put on as a committee hearing, and it did not make it out of committee, so the bill has now died. We have a NREA board meeting in a couple of weeks in Wells that Jack and I will be attending, and we will talk more about this and what future strategies we hold and if we're going to go after this again. One of my concerns with us having a bill that didn't make it through was, did we lose any political clout? Did we, you know, have any issues at the state level? And I have been reassured multiple times that we absolutely did not, that we negotiated in good faith. The legislators knew that. They were simply not, the solar developers were not going to become neutral on this bill. There was no working with them on that. So next, I'm going to have Vernon give you an update on what we've been doing on a federal level.
I'll stand up so I can see everybody. We went to the NRECA legislative conference in April, the end of April. It was a couple days conference. The first day was kind of getting presentations from the NRECA. They kind of trained us up in the issues and how we ought to present them to our legislators. And then the second day, we spent the day going to every single one of the Nevada delegation, which is kind of abnormal. I mean, we hit every single one. The NREA group that you see there got to all of them. That was partly due to Lisa Levine and her coordination. She had us like a Swiss watch going from one place to another. She had it figured out. So we went to each one of them. Next one. Okay. And we kind of focused on a couple of different issues. This was just a couple of days before the Hell Cooper Dam Act actually was presented. This is a bicameral bill, so there was a Senate bill presented by Catherine Cortez Masto, and the House bill was presented by Susan Lee on the House. All the Nevada delegation co-sponsored it. And I mean, I'm not going to say we were responsible for that next 2 days getting, but we thanked them very much for them supporting it. It was already known that they were about to do that, so.
We can take some credit for that.
We can take some
credit. We had some really good meetings.
We lobbied hard on it. And so hopefully if that bill goes through, that's $50 million that's unstranded from federal funds that would go for maintenance and improvement of the dam, which is important for us. We also talked about permitting reform. We were in this meeting with Congressman Horsford, who's our congressman, and we brought up our project across the Mesa, the line across the Mesa, and how it took about a decade to get permitted on the right-of-way. And in between that time, the cost just kept going up, right? And those costs go straight to our ratepayers, right? Because as they go up, we've got to pay it and pass it on to them. So we urged him to support some permitting reform to kind of cut down those time frames.
Can I add a little something to this? So last year, Mendes and I had a meeting with Congressman Horsford's office. And the day of, they pushed our meeting back. So we all went and waited, and when we arrived to a locked office that they were actually even a no-show. They completely stood us up. We were not scheduled to meet with the congressman himself, but we were scheduled to meet with his chief of staff and two other staff members, and they didn't even bother to tell us that they weren't coming. This year, we had a breakfast in the morning to just, you know, rally all of the troops, get our layout and our agenda of who was meeting with who was writing where, all of the lay of the land of getting into the Capitol, because the getting through security it is an ordeal all in itself. Vernon left because Vernon had already brokered a meeting with Congressman Horsford's chief of staff privately. So he met with her in the morning before any of us got there and just had his own meeting representing OPD-5. We then later met as a group, and they were like old friends being reunited, like, oh, Vernon, how have you been? So Vernon's prior relationships and his ability to call on friends and get in there and deliver the message, I don't want us to take that for granted. He represented us incredibly well on both the state and the federal level.
You have to love Mr. Student's hat. He just looks like...
Oh, there's a great story behind that hat.
Oh, there is a story.
Oh, Joe.
Yeah, that's a good story, but I won't keep you too late here.
Okay, yeah. We'll save that for the drive to Wells.
I think it's really, on that subject, I think it's really important to note that it's good to have a good relationship with the congressperson. But where the rubber hits the road is with the staff. So if you can get to know the staff and they know you, and you can communicate with them, then you can get a lot done that way. The other thing was dealing with federal regulations. We talked about the EPA power plant rule, which is, if it stands, makes it very difficult to build and maintain base load power plants in the future, and that could cause, you know, increases in cost. Fix Our Forest Act, which is everything that our delegation voiced a lot of support for. That's for people in, you know, heavily vegetated areas. Even here in Nevada, there are some of those where it's very difficult for them to get in on the public land right-of-ways and get things fixed. And then environmental policies at Glen Canyon Dam, we've done some advocacy on that, try to keep the dam running even with low water and environmental issues. So that is presentation. If there's any questions.
One of the things that I'm so happy that Vernon finished with this slide. Dina Titus has in the past not met with NREA. There has been times that we have issued a check in support of her and ask that all she do is come and meet with us to pick up the check, and she's chose not to come and get the check. And this time she met with our delegation. We met with every single legislator and their chief of staff for every single representative. And that the lion's share of credit goes to Lisa. She, you can see her on the left. I think a lot of you met her at Mendes's retirement party. She stands about 5'3". And we had to ride in the, I hate to call it the bowels of the Capitol, but we were down in the tunnel and we're riding in these little train cars. And they stopped, and it was Cory Booker, I think. He thinks he's supposed to get off. We're separated into two cars. He thinks we're supposed to get off. So then people start following. And she steps out. She's like, Nevada, back in the cars. And every one of those tall men turned on their heels and went right back into the car quietly and rode to the next stop. She was militant in her delivery, and she kept us on task. And we made every single meeting on time. And again, we met with every single legislator. So it was a wonderful trip.
So does she have the same access, you think, that Carolyn had, both in state and federal?
She worked directly for Dina Titus for 10 years. I would say she's far better connected on the federal level than Carolyn. Yeah. Yes, very well connected. Just as a wrap-up of this, I signed an op-ed that was put into the Las Vegas Review-Journal on the Sunday edition for in support of the Help Hoover Dam Act. And again, the same that we're doing at the state, we're doing at the federal level. We are maintaining those relationships. We're following up with emails, thanking them for their time. We're giving them updates of all of the social media and newspaper posts, that as well as our op-ed. And then we have invited a number of them to come for visits of our system tour. One of the things that we've also discussed is if we get the Catherine Cortez Masto said that she would love to come in August. Vernon has invited Congressman Horsford to come and look at our new transmission line. If those come, if those happen, as well as if we receive the grant funding, the governor should be starting his campaigning, and I'm sure that he would love a photo op with us too. And I told him, all seven of my board, I can promise you, will be out there with a gold shovel, taking a picture with you if we can get that money from the grant. So we will keep you guys up to date on those relationships and how things are going. And that's all I have, Mr. Chairman.
Wow, amazing update. Glad we didn't miss it.
Me too.
If you don't mind, there was one piece of legislation that was kind of potentially ugly.
456.
Yes.
It died. It never even made it out of the committee at the assembly.
Good.
Yep.
Lots of signed die going on.
Yeah.
This year. Okay, let's go to L, public comments. Any public comments? Okay, any trustee comments?
I just have to say thank you to Melissa for stepping up and filling the void. She did a great job with the scholarships last night. So whether I bamboozled her or not, she did great.
Thank you. It was actually really fun.
The next question I have is that I've had a couple of kids in the valley ask about the summer temp jobs. Anybody know where we're at with that?
Yes, we... Kyle and members of his team, as well as Human Resources, held interviews for those last week or the week before.
Some
recently.
Last week, but mostly the week before.
Recently, they held them, and we got great kids. We had really good applications, and we have four students that have been chosen, and all of them will start on June 9th.
Okay, deal. All right, thank you. Now, one more question, if you don't mind.
Sure.
Just because I'm going through the flowchart stuff at my day job, I got looking back on the Google Drive on our flowchart. How does that transpire with if something happens to Melissa? Mm-hmm. Who falls into that second tier assistant position or deputy of sort? Have we figured that out? What's your guys' thoughts?
So what we have done in the past is that Mendes has given a sealed record to the chairman that says, in the instance that I become incapacitated for whatever reason, then the chairman would open that letter and see who was designated as next. I have the letter and the envelope on my desk. I just haven't filled it out yet. But that's part of my 90-day plan.
Now, I'm just curious, just because I got looking at the flowchart and went back to the OBD flowchart. I'm like, I wonder how that works out. Mm-hmm. When I was on the water district board, same thing. They didn't really have a second tier. Well, the general manager goes to Europe for 6 weeks, and there's many, many projects going on, and they didn't really know who could make that decision.
Yeah.
So I was just kind of curious how you guys did
that. So ours is, right now, every manager is in charge of their division, and so they would make those decisions. If it's an outage situation, Kevin and Kyle would coordinate with that. If it's an injury, depending on the department, then that manager would be in charge. So they split that up evenly. If it was that I was to be incapacitated for a long period of time, then there would be somebody who would set in the interim, and then the board would make the decision on how that position's filled.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I have one comment.
Okay.
I was thoroughly impressed over the last few months on our news coverage. And I looked in the paper, and I saw an article about a couple of our employees who just got certified in staking, right?
Yes.
And they said that and the comments that were in them, their comments afterwards were that how nice it was to have a company that supports them. And then even Randall was quoted saying how nice it was to have a board that allowed that to happen and help finance it. And I thought, that's really super kind of articles to have so the public knows what kind of job you're doing. Not necessarily the board, but having that atmosphere where employees feel like a real family keeps employees and gets terrific loyalty. And I really want to compliment the staff on getting those kind of things out there, which we have not always done as we could. So that's great.
I am over the moon excited when I look at both our social media and our website. If you guys don't follow us on Facebook, or if you don't get on Facebook often, just every couple of weeks look at OPD5, and we have a news feed. The articles are incredible, and we have good information. Our crew was out working on the Mesa, And I don't know if Vernon just, you know, from his press days, his ear is tuned, but the next thing I know, there goes his car, and he's going to take pictures of the guys out working on the mesa. He is doing just an incredible job. And we have, I've received some teasing from some of our neighboring utilities about that now their staff feels like they've got to up their game. And I'm like, you can up your game, you just can't have Vernon.
I think you just don't call the Vernon, hire Vernon.
Yeah, yes.
Oh my, very good.
So I would like to thank you all for your support of the Cody Hardy family and the whole team. Many of you there support, so just thank you.
Yeah.
Such a
approval of next board meeting on June 18th in Mesquite.
I'll move that we have our next board meeting in Mesquite on June 18th at 3 p.m.
We have a motion.
Somebody have a second.
We have a motion. And a everybody in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any, what's the word?
Any opposed.
Any opposed? All right.
Mr. Chairman, just for the record, I will not be able to attend on the 18th. I will be in Netherlands on that day.
Oh, wow.
Right.
Are you lobbying? Or?
No, I am. I'm kidless now, which is a great thing to be. So my wife and I are going to
the river for
us. I know, I still have them. But and two of them I still have to pay for even. But they don't even on the trip. So we're going to river cruise up the Rhine and the Danube. And,
good for you guys.
It starts on the 17th. So I will be unavailable, but I will make sure I've talked to Melissa, and if anyone has any questions in advance of that board meeting, I'm here until the 17th and can answer any questions.
Well, we feel bad you can't see the newly remodeled boardroom on the 18th.
Worry about that while you're going.
But we'll think about you. Mm. Okay, we have an executive session, but we're going to take a 5-minute break.
Thank you.
Right?
Good job. It's like a natural.